Well, that's annoying as hell. Good evening. This is the horn. 2 minutes past the hour. 2 minutes just spent trying to play the, you know, intro to the program, only for some reason, can't. Hi, y'all. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, it's Thursday, the 27th day of October 2016. We're almost fresh out of October, and we are definitely fresh out of program intro, and a whole lot of other stuff, too. I mean, just a minute, just because I'm curious. Let's see, will anything else play? No, it doesn't play either. Well, this is troubling. But, you know, we'll find a way through it. Let's see. Just a second here. All right, so I got a feeling we're going to have to do this. Because you wanted to hear me do this. You know, this. You tuned in for the program. Instead, you get, you know, Bob bitching at his computer. And really, the computer doesn't deserve it. I mean, Jesus Christ, it's 6-7 years old. One of several that are in line here, and yeah. So we'll see if we can't do it on a different machine. I mean, not the intro. It's kind of that's kind of out of the way now. It is curiously enough. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. It's nice to know you're listening. Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I am Bob Kincaid, and I'll be back in the chat room here in a little bit, depending on what happens, and thank you, Randy. Randy and PA noting loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac. Good. That's good to know. I don't know why the sound card has taken a powder on one of the machines, but, well, these things happen, I guess. But we'll get through it. Can't tell you who's in the chat room right now, because I'm not. I'll try to work my way around to that later. Let's see. Yeah, this is kind of important. We are a listener-supported broadcast operation. I don't have any... I can't say, you know, brought to you by Northrop Grumman making American lives better by figuring out how to more efficiently and thoroughly bomb brown people like they do over on, you know, National Petroleum Radio. Can't do that. I can't tell you that the horn is brought to you by clean coal like they did to the tune of millions upon millions upon millions of dollars over at Chicken Noodle News. No. Thank you for letting me know, Thomas, FYI Nation, loud and clear over there. Good. At least we know that part of the... Yeah, no, this is strictly a local issue. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you very, very kindly. No, the only... You know who brings you the horn? You. You bring you the horn. And, well, we're nearing the end of the month, and we've struggled... Well, we struggled all this year. I mean, we've managed to beat the Swede every month. And some months easier than others. Some months it happened right at the very end. And so we're looking for our 10th month of Swede beating. And right now we are down $525. We're down $525 thanks overnight to Michael in Madison and to Arnold in PA. Thank you very kindly, both of you. It is much appreciated. So $525. By tomorrow, it'll be $725. But $525 to go in fundraising for the evening. And, you know how, well, one at 525 or, let's see, 262.50 for two. That would mean... one at 1:31 and a quarter. No, four at 1:31 and a quarter. And after that, my head begins to hurt. But the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. And it's under the tab Contribute. And there are premiums on the table, offers on the table right now. This time of month, we are badly in need of new subscribers. And that means that, we're still looking to get to the happy 100, let alone the forceful 400. But if you would like, just check that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and two things will happen. For the next two people who subscribe, your subscription will be courtesy of Harold and the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Your subscription will be rounded up by $5 per month for the next 12 months for the next two people. Okay? That's important. That's for two people. For everybody who subscribes between now and Election Day, courtesy of Ralph's, your first month subscription gets an $11 boost. And Michael set up a new subscription just last night, so that means an $11 boost courtesy of Ralph's and $5 a month from here on to this time next year, as long as the subscription remains in force, courtesy of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Okay? And then, you know, like I said, $525 in fundraising, just catching up with the rest of the week. And that, you know, numbers like that make my liver quiver. Because bills pay, bills make program go. So we've gotten that out of the way, and hopefully it'll take care of itself in short order. The computer's rebooting itself, and we'll be up and running sometime. Let's see. What I had a couple of things I wanted to get started with, but I plan on doing that. Let's see. Let's get things started with the Department of. Stop telling people how to vote, Bob. Okay. And as a as a sort of introductory note on this, what I'm about to tell you about is absolutely non-scientific. It is strictly anecdotal, I suppose. But I think it's worthy of a little bit of discussion. It comes out of my state, West Virginia, and it's a Facebook post or a Facebook thing by my buddy Brian Reznor. A couple of days ago, he posted a mock presidential election just for people who follow him on Facebook. And he included Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, Don't Feel the Johnson, Gary Johnson, Jill What's Cincinnati, Alex Stein, and Vermin Supreme. And the way he tallied votes, I thought this was rather clever. Since there are now an expanded range of emojis on Facebook, you know, the thumbs up, the heartbeat, the laughing emoji, the wow emoji, and the crying emoji, he assigned those emojis to the different candidates. Now, again, this happens in West Virginia, and B-Rez doesn't have a bunch of buddies outside West Virginia, Facebook friends. So it probably says, well, a little more about this place maybe than others. But I thought you might be interested in the results. It being a Facebook survey of sorts, non-scientific, in West Virginia, it was almost a foregone conclusion that Donald J. Trump, a millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane, so, anyway, okay, Donald J. Trump won. He won with 132 votes. I know. Coming in second by only 3 votes, losing by only 3 votes in this completely unscientific poll, Hillary Clinton. At 129. Third place went to Vermin Supreme. Third place went to Vermin Supreme with 100. Third place went to Vermin Supreme with 34 votes. Fourth place went to Gary Johnson with 23 votes. Fifth and final place went to the Green Party candidate Jill Stein. With a whopping 13 votes. Yes, completely unscientific poll. Absolutely unscientific. Just a matter of preferences and clicking emojis. But it says something. Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump by 3 votes. Now, let's see. Let's do some math. Okay, so let's give Donald Trump the Johnson votes. And really, wouldn't Donald Trump get the Johnson votes in this election? So that's 135. That's 155 if you give Johnson to Donald Trump. Let's split the votes evenly. From Vermin Supreme and give them to each. So 155, 165, 172. 172 for Trump and 172 for Trump and 139. 146. And then let's give Jill's 156, 159. And Trump wins in West Virginia anyway. Interesting, isn't it? What starts out as a silly little non-scientific poll of his Facebook friends actually becomes an interesting little cautionary tale about third-party politics in presidential elections where there's only one of two choices. And the outcome is that you wind up with Benito Cheeto as President of the United States. Yeah, there, okay, yeah, I see you're already practicing, Brother Deacon Asa, out in British Columbia. Asa says, it says something, all right. It says the book face vote was rigged! Mm-hmm. Definitely rigged. Absolutely, positively, definitely rigged. So I thought it would be interesting to mention that. If only four of the people who cast their wow emoji for Jill Stein had cast him for Hillary Clinton, she would have beaten Donald Trump in a West Virginia unscientific Facebook poll of a very small sample. Of course, I told B-Rez I thought he had the emojis backwards. Gary Johnson should get the wow, dude, emoji. And Jill Stein should get the one that was laughing. You know, like, you know, laughing joke. Yeah. So that. Just food for thought. Now, secondarily, and we're going to have to find out if I don't know what in the hell's going on with audio this evening. I want to, I don't often do this kind of thing, but I was actually pretty impressed with the latest commentary from Trey Crowder, the liberal redneck, who is back from his sojourn to the wilds, the mean streets of New York City. And he's happily ensconced back below the cornbread curtain for a while now. I wanted to share the comments with you because he says something here that I think is extremely valuable and worthy of our consideration. So, with any luck, the audio will play, and you'll hear this.
Trey Crowder, God damn, I'm glad to be back on my back porch, man. They ain't got many back porches in Manhattan, y'all. And also, everybody's always yelling at each other and not about college football. Don't hit for me. Anyway, I'm glad to be home. And I'm also glad that we are in the home stretch of this ass dog and shit pony show that has been the 2016 election. We're almost there, y'all. We are. And praise fake gay Jesus for it, too, because I can't take any more. Seriously, I would rather fillet Florida-Georgia line in the middle of Times Square on New Year's fucking Eve than to listen to one more minute of a debate between these two. But it's almost over. So I wanted to take a moment to address all my fellow rednecks out there and ask them, plead with them, don't do it, y'all. Don't vote for that anus-mouthed, leathery tangerine. Don't do it. And look, I'm not telling you vote for Hillary.
Stand by a minute. Now, I want you to know something. I referenced over the last couple of nights Donald J. Trump as having a mouth like an anus. And I didn't lift it from Trey Crowder. I didn't lift it from anybody. It was just a function of looking at his mouth and thinking about all the dogs I've ever seen in my life walking around with their tails curled up over their backs. At least the ones whose butts didn't wind up looking like Jesus. Because that's a thing. But it's kind of interesting the way that the common themes can evolve and emerge in the way we perceive things. And, you know, Trey Crowder, being a brilliant comedian, has taken it one step further and made it even funnier by using the phrase anus mouth leathery tangerine. And it's, I mean, you got to respect that. You got to respect genius like that. But that's not why I'm playing this audio. And I'm going to let it roll again.
Do it, y'all. Don't vote for that anus mouth leathery tangerine. Don't do it. And look, I'm not telling you vote for Hillary. I mean, I'm going to, but I get it, okay? You blame her, her husband, her party for your job.
Wake up, sheeple! He's gonna vote for her. Never mind. Here's where the important part starts. And I think this is why I'm playing this particular clip. Because this is as astute an analysis of the disaffection of a certain portion of Donald J. Trump's voting base as any I have lately seen or heard. There is more nuance and more intelligence in this than in every piece of braying bullshit that emanates from the for-profit media desperate to explain the Trump phenomenon. Nobody's anywhere near getting it right in the for-profit media. This is stuff that this is a level of analysis that would make Joe Bagent proud. Because this gets it. All the way down to the ground. Here we go.
But I get it, okay? You blame her, her husband, her party for your job leaving for Mexico, and you're convinced liberal America don't give a shit about you. And you know what? You're right. They don't. In the minds of many Americans, rednecks...
Because you're convinced liberal America don't give a shit about you, and you're right, they don't. Let that go all the way in. It's the truth. It's the absolute damn truth. Let it settle in, those of you who, like me, are down here below the cornbread curtain, cornpone curtain. But of course, redneckery knows no geography. You can damned well just as easily be a redneck in Minnesota or Idaho as you can in Alabama or Mississippi Stan. I mean, this thing has had, by now, this video has had something on the order of in excess of 1.6 million views. And I don't know if, I don't think it's all, I bet, I'm willing to bet it's not all liberals. Or all voters for her. Take it all in.
When you're convinced liberal America don't give a shit about you. And you know what? You're right. They don't. In the minds of many Americans, rednecks exist only as a punchline, a scapegoat, or, as is the case with Trump, a resource to be exploited. Fuck them. Don't vote for them if you don't want to. They ain't earned your support. But he ain't either. He ain't earned any of this. If y'all really think that some blue blood born with a silver dildo in his mouth, goddamn Yankee, no offense to some of y'all, has any idea about the struggles of our people, about what we go through, then you're more desperate to believe in something than I dared to think. And look, I know he looks you in the eye and promises he's going to go get your job back, put you back to work, and I know that that's what really matters to you. But I also know that he is full of shit. And yes, they all are, but he is uniquely dangerous in his incompetence. He has no idea how to deliver on any of the promises that he's made to you, and he only made them in the first place because he knows it's what you want to hear. He is using you. Don't let him get away with that shit. Look, it's like this. Thank you, football team. Imagine y'all have been bad for years and years. Not a stretch in my case. Now imagine they fire the coach, and they come to you as a fan base, and they say, look, you're going to love this new guy. He promises we're going to win twice as many games. We're going to score all kinds of points. He's going to go get our touchdowns back from the Mexicans. It's going to be awesome. You'd be like, hell yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So where's he coming from? Where'd he coach at before this? And they're like, oh, actually, he's not a football coach. He's a European soccer coach with the emotional intelligence and fingers of a fucking six-year-old. Also, he rapes. You'd be like, what the fuck? No. Why would we do that? That would be an embarrassment to our program, to everything we stand for. No. Wouldn't you? Well, this is exactly like that, only instead of touchdowns and conference championships, it's you and your family's future at stake. And deep down, you know I'm right. You know that he's unfit to lead. So don't do it. I'm not telling you to stay at home. It's our right and duty as Americans to vote, okay? But if you can't stomach throwing one for Hillary, then go third party. Right in Mickey Mouse. Hell, right in me. But do not vote for Donald Trump. I love y'all like chicken. I'll see y'all on the other side.
Like I said, as astute an analysis as anything, well, more astute than anything coming out of New York City and the broadcast hubs there or the bureaus of Washington, D.C. More intelligence there than all the hand-wringing that takes place every Sunday on Face the Prostitutes of the Nation. Absolutely. And the core of it is that, and he didn't address it, Trey Crowder didn't address this, I have and I will, he wasn't talking to the Klansmen. He wasn't talking to the neo-Nazis and the skinheads. He wasn't talking to the Oath Keepers. He wasn't talking to the Stormfronters or the white nationalists or the Bundy Bunch. That, which, all told, make up about half of whatever number winds up voting for Donald Trump. God, I'm sorry we're talking about Donald Trump again. I'm sorry we're talking about politics again. These particular politics. But it felt like I have to. Because as Bernie pointed out, Wall Street's not working for working America. Bernie said the same things Trey Crowder did, only with a somewhat stranger, to my ear at least, accent. Bernie, of course, is voting for Hillary Clinton. Trey Crowder is. I am. For a good reason. In my case, I feel like it would be irresponsible to vote for anyone else. But there are large questions that loom for this country. And we've not, you know, Bernie's the one that brought all of this to the forefront. The grinding of the middle class. The absolute deafness of the power elite to the needs of people who work for a living. And there is no doubt. You'll notice he said, don't vote for her if you don't want to. Don't. But the point is not to vote for Trump. Now, I was thinking, I was talking some with Chris in Germany about this. I was, for a long time, I've said we needed a Marshall Plan for Appalachia. Because, the economy here is falling apart. There are places where it's not quite as bad. I mean, compared to West Virginia, Talabama is booming because their unemployment rate has dipped below 5%. The question is, what does it mean to have less than 5% unemployment in a worker's hellhole like Talabama, where you can be on an assembly line making cars that sell for $70,000-$80,000 and be getting $13 an hour to do it and have management telling you better by God be glad you're getting that, because you got no union, you got no representation, you got no job security. Unemployment numbers as raw expressions of success are a failure. You can have less than 5% unemployment in a place like Talabama, and you can still have people living below the margins of anything anyone would think of as secure. And ain't nobody getting rich building Mercedes-Benz or Hyundais or what the hell ever for $13 an hour if they're getting that. But, people can't just get up and move to California now, can they? Or Massachusetts. California and Massachusetts only have... You don't want them. They don't want them. So we either have to succeed or fail where we stand, or just give up. But back to the Marshall Plan. The Marshall Plan, of course, was what lifted ravaged Europe out of its own self-imposed wreckage. At the end of the Second World War, Harry S. Truman and his Democratic Party crafted a plan advocated by General George S. Marshall to rehabilitate an entire continent, an entire civilization that was in a shambles. There were reasons for doing this on multiple levels. One of which was holding back the tide of the Soviet Union, which would have happily gobbled up the entirety of Europe. The other was to preserve capitalism and preserve markets for the United States, which had suffered none of the destructive aspects of that global war. All the physical destruction had taken place, outside the territorial boundaries of the United States once you stop counting, you know, Pearl Harbor. But inside Marshall's plan was also some fairly simple human compassion. And also a recognition that people who are in the depths of suffering are capable of making the suffering worse. And thus you get the Marshall Plan. A little bit later, you get the Berlin Airlift as well. What was the main focus of the Berlin Airlift? Food and fuel to keep West Berlin from being murdered directly or indirectly by the Soviets. And so when that's what I'm talking about when I say Appalachia needs a Marshall Plan. Direct interference in the most positive sense of the word with the process that is currently destroying an entire region of the United States. Yeah, Duncan reminding me, the Japanese had an island in Alaska, Attu. That's why I said, for the most part. And in conjunction with what Trey Crowder said about they don't care about y'all, you know, when he said, you're right, they don't care. I mean, there's some nuance in there. I mean, you could say to somebody like Trey Crowder, well, yeah, it wasn't just Democrats that passed NAFTA. NAFTA was the darling of the George H.W. Bush administration, and that was a ball they got started rolling. And had he won the presidency, NAFTA would have passed the Congress and been signed into law by him. It was going to happen one way or the other, is the point. But Bill Clinton gets to wear it because he signed it. See what I mean? You know, and the destruction of Appalachia? Well, that's a ball that got rolling under Bill Clinton. A lot of the people I know in the effort to oppose the ongoing destruction and poisoning of this region by the coal industry like to look back to the 8 years of the reign of error when mountaintop removal just went just ass mad. And it seemed like the whole damn place was blowing up. But one of the things that made that possible was the so-called stream buffer zone revision by the EPA, the Army Corps of Engineers, etc. And guess what? The stream buffer zone rule revision, clarification as it was later termed, that got started in the Clinton administration. But Democrats and Republicans alike voted for NAFTA. Because the people sitting in Congress didn't have a meaningful constituency that worked in a textile mill in Georgia or an underwear factory in Alabama. They didn't count. They so seldom do. So the question then becomes one of, well, okay, then, how do we unring this bell? How do we untie this Gordian knot? Well, it just so happens that a news story was published yesterday at the Charleston Gazette. that provides a glimpse of how we go about fixing desperate and dire economic problems. So last year, Barack Obama announced what is called his Power Initiative. And as the Gazette story sets it forth, the program is designed to help communities that are hard hit by the decline of the coal industry. In August, West Virginia programs and communities received more than $16 million as part of the first round of grants, nearly 40% of the money given out. Well, there's been another round, and $5.6 million have been given out in this latest round in West Virginia. Let's see how they plan to revitalize the shambles economy of West Virginia. Well, the biggest hunk of change was $2.04 million. The city of Bluefield, West Virginia, which sits right down on the Virginia line, got that money for something called the Bluefield Commercialization Station Project Plan Activity. No, the Bluefield Commercialization Station Project. Well, anything with a name like that certainly must be something. So what are they going to do? The Bluefield Commercialization Station Project. Well, they're going to take a 50,000 square foot freight station and they're going to turn it into what is called a business incubator. For $2.04 million, the plan says that it will, quote, support the creation and retention of 72 jobs, expand at least 12 local businesses, and leverage $510,000 in private investment. Well, by God, if you can spend $2 million to get $510,000 back, I'm no accountant and certainly no economist, but isn't that like buying eggs in Malta for 3 cents and selling them on Pianosa for 2 cents and everyone makes a profit and everyone has a share? Ah, maybe not. That's what the White House said about that grant. Then there's $1.5 million to the Marshall University Research Corporation. They got that $1.5 million for their project called the Sprouting Farms Project. And they're going to develop agriculture in 9 southern West Virginia counties. And the $1.5 million will be spent on training programs, buying and upgrading the project site and facilities, and supporting new agricultural businesses and program graduates. Alongside the Claude Worthington Benedum Foundation, they're going to create 20 new businesses and 33 new jobs, according to the White House fact sheet again. Right. All right, so those two things are a little bit tangible. I mean, there's going to be a business incubator in Bluefield. And they're going to teach, Marshall University's Research Corporation is going to teach farming to people whose ancestors were farmers before they were enslaved by the coal industry. But that's not it. I mean, that's only 2 and 3. That's $3.54 million out of $5.6 million. What else? The Center for Rural Health Development in Hurricane, West Virginia, is going to get $362,989 for the West Virginia Rural Health Infrastructure Loan Fund project. And they're going to have revolving loans to strengthen the healthcare industry in 25 West Virginia counties. That medical? Healthcare? $362,000? Shit, that won't pay the salary of one drug rep, will it? One hopes it would go to, I don't know. Then there's reconnecting McDowell in Charleston. And they're going to get $150,000 to develop. Okay, not to do, but to develop. And when you read this stuff, you have to read for the verbs. They're going to use $150,000 to develop an economic development and diversification strategy for the city of Welch, which is the county seat of McDowell County, poorest county in the United States. And the plan they're going to develop and have a diversification strategy for is for something called Renaissance Village Apartments, which itself is a housing project. And it's going to develop rental housing. Notice the word build here isn't anywhere to be found. We're going to develop it. Rental housing in downtown Welch, West Virginia, for teachers and young professionals employed in the area. And there's when they get around to the actual doing something part of it, that's a need, because one of the reasons you can't get teachers to teach in McDowell County schools such as they are, because there's nowhere for them to live, because the place has completely fallen apart, and a whole bunch of McDowell County is just a goddamn toxic waste zone. So $150,000 is going to go to an outfit that calls itself Reconnecting McDowell. And they're going to use that $150,000 to develop a strategy. Not to develop a building, and God knows not to build a building, but to develop a strategy for diversification of the strategy to build. Oh, my Jesus. $140,000 is going to go to West Virginia Connecting Communities in Charleston, who are going to work with the New River Gorge Trail Association. Hey, that's my neck of the woods. On an economic feasibility study for a regionally connected bike trail system in Fayette and Nicholas counties. In other words, they're not going to build anything. They're not going to make anything. They're going to develop a strategy for an economic feasibility study. And then they're going to need more money for the study. And there still won't be a shovel full of dirt moved. Region 4 Planning and Development Council in Somersville, West Virginia, also kind of my neck of the woods, will get $123,488. They're going to use that to develop a strategic plan for the Upper Kanawha Valley in partnership with the Center for Rural Entrepreneurship. You know what the problem is with the French language? Ain't got a word for entrepreneurs. You have to say that every time you see the word entrepreneur. So $123,488 is going to develop a strategic plan. It's not going to produce the strategic plan. It's only going to develop it. You know, you take, back in the days when we used film, you take the film into the dark room and you develop the film. But you still don't have any pictures because you have to print. So this is all just going to be the wet negatives hanging by a hanging by a clothespin on a line, you know, dripping dry. The Williamson Health and Wellness Center will get $105,000 for grant writing assistance. Not for grant writing, but just to assist grant writing. And also, with that $105,000, to develop a feasibility study, a strategic plan, and preliminary architectural design work for a building that used to be a pill mill in downtown Williamson. In other words, nothing. If deemed viable, in other words, once the money's gone, if it still looks like something that could be done, they'll rebuild the building as what is being described as a one-stop facility that would provide workforce training, opioid addiction and substance abuse treatment services to help people in recovery get ready to join the workforce. Anything that helps with our opioid and heroin problem in West Virginia has got to be a good thing, right? But this $105,000 isn't going to do that. It's only going to provide grant writing assistance to develop something. The West Virginia Community Development Hub in Fairmont is going to get $93,495. And in conjunction with the International Economic Development Council, they're going to provide technical assistance to Boone, Greenbrier, Lincoln, McDowell, and Wyoming counties. I don't like being as cynical as I am, but does that actually sound like anything? Because it doesn't to me. The Randolph County Development Authority in Elkins is going to get $90,000 to promote and expand the hardwood industry cluster in partnership with the Hardwood Alliance Zone, which means the Hardwood Alliance Zone will get some of the $90,000. But again, to promote and expand the hardwood industry cluster, which means they're going to spend $90,000 on advertising, it sounds like. Even in West Virginia, that won't go very far. Oh, we're going to build a website. The Webster County Economic Development Authority in Webster Springs gets $60,000 for a feasibility study. They're at least going to get the study. They're not going to just develop the plan for the study. They're going to spend $60,000 on a feasibility study for the development of a multi-county all-terrain vehicle trail system in five counties. Once again, they're not going to develop the multi-county all-terrain vehicle trail system in five counties. They're going to study whether it's feasible or not with $60,000. I'm feeling a little creepy about how I'm feeling about all of this. Because I don't like right-wing radio. I don't like right-wingers. I don't like conservatives. I don't like Republicans. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, healthers, birchers, booger eaters. And if you tune in white-wing radio, you'll hear white-wing talkers going over lists like this saying, "This is where your, my friends, this is how the liberals fritter away your tax dollars." And I don't ever even want to be in the same time zone as that kind of thinking. As I can... And then finally, $497,000 is going to go to the Region 1 Planning... Oh, no, there's more. That's just the last one before the ad. $497,000 is going to go to the Region 1 Planning and Development Council in Princeton for the Coalfields Cluster Mapping Initiative Research Project. Now, what on earth do you reckon $497,000 is going to go to do that? Well, they're going to map the... Now, remember, this is all part of the power plan, which is supposed to help communities get over the collapse of the coal industry. The $497,000 is going to map the coal industry supply chain across Kentucky, West Virginia, and Virginia. You know, I'm pretty sure that the railroads and the trucking companies and the coal companies already know that. And if you're trying to empower people past the coal-fired mono economy, why do you even want to do that in the first place? $349,999. Come on, guys, just make it $350,000. Goes to the West Virginia University Research Corporation in Morgantown. Because, you know, Marshall got some money, too. So, you know, it's like having children. If you give to one, you have to give to the other. And that $349,999, fuckers, makes me want to send them a damn dollar. You know that? Is going to be used for, get this, the economic analysis of coal industry ecosystem in Appalachia project. This study will examine the full ecosystem of the coal industry in Appalachia and specifically identify, quantify, and map data on all relevant coal industry activity throughout the Appalachian region. $349,999. Fuck them. I'm not sending them a dollar for that. In other words, they're going to spend $349,999 to map something. Well, no, I take that back. To specifically identify, quantify, and map data on all relevant coal industry activity throughout the Appalachian region. In other words, this is something that the various departments of environmental quality and or protecting, depending on which state and or commonwealth is in question, should already have done, but for some reason hasn't. But since it'll belong to the West Virginia University Research Corporation, it also will not be governmental data and won't have the force of, well, much of anything. And then finally, Downstream Strategies. I know these folks. They've done some good work in the past. Gets $149,998. Really, guys? I mean, I know. You go to Kmart, and $4.99 doesn't really feel quite so much like $5, but it's still $5. I mean, the Region 1 Planning and Development Council in Princeton didn't get $496,999. They got $497,000, but they're going to map the coal industry supply chain across Kentucky, Virginia, and West Virginia. Oh, I knew that might light somebody up, Brother Deacon Gerald pointing out, hell, I'll map coal out for you. Start south of the Kanawha and New Rivers and go south. Now, how about my share of that almost $500,000? Downstream Strategies in Morgantown is going to get $149,998 for Strengthening Economic Resilience in Appalachian Communities Project. This research, and that's not to say research is bad. Research is good. Research is all science-y, and it produces things like facts. This research will explore and document strategies and policies Oh, dear. That sounds pretty weedy, doesn't it? And not weedy in the good way, either. Strategies and explore and document strategies and policies. So if you're documenting the strategies and policies, and if you're exploring them, exploring and documenting strategies and policies means the strategies and policies already exist. You're just exploring and documenting them. You're saying, hey, look at all these strategies and policies that we've explored, and now we're documenting them. But they're not just any strategies and policies. No. They're strategies and policies local leaders can use to enhance the future economic prospects of coal-impacted communities. What a perfect metaphor. You know, when your digestive system stops working right and you can't poop, sometimes the medical diagnosis for that is impaction. And I guess that's what Appalachia has. We're impacted with coal. We have coal-impacted communities. We have communities that just can't excrete coal's effects on them. So there it is. 5.56 million dollars. And if we come back and revisit this in a year or two, and we won't, we will find that there is somewhere near nothing to show for that $5.56 million. Maybe an empty warehouse in Bluefield with a big sign that says Business Incubator written on it. Maybe a sign that says Home of Teaching People How to Grow Tomatoes in Their Backyards. All the plans and development strategies will be, well, we don't really much use file cabinets anymore, do we? They'll just be lost as a, it'll just be somewhere out in the ether as a bunch of zeros and ones gathering tiny little electrical equivalents of dust. Now, I said a little bit ago they're not making anything, but James takes issue with that notion. James wrote to say, not making anything? They're making millionaires who will beget billionaires who can one day run for president. Pay attention! My bad, James, my bad. But all those plans for developing a strategy to create a diversification project feasibility study, that's a lot of words that mean we're going to pay somebody to sit in a chair at a desk and generate some sort of jabberwocky that's never going to be put into use, because this is West Virginia in the first place, and nobody's interested in even acknowledging that there's anything to our future but coal. Because after all, if we just elect Donald Trump and one of the two candidates for governor, we're going to be up to our little chinny chin chins in coal again, because it's all been, we're just being kept away from it from that Obama and his job killing EPA. This, of course, you and I both know, is a line of meretricious horseshit. It's over, to an extent. The days of mass employment in the coal industry are over. That's why when Peabody and Alpha went into bankruptcy, they had to get rid of all of those pensions. Because those were liabilities. That was money they had already stolen from people who had already traded their time for a deferment of a certain part of their compensation. And people like Alpha and Peabody, Patriot, laughed all the way to the bankruptcy court. And now, they're back. And they're not much interested in doing underground mining in southern West Virginia anymore. Because that requires people. Instead, why not buy a bunch of heavy equipment, some D9 cats, and some giant dump trucks, and a shit ton of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil, and pay a couple of blasting technicians and a few truck drivers, blow the hell out of Mountain B, which you say that you'll use the profits from to reclaim Mountain A, which is a lie, and get the coal and sell the coal and pay handsome bonuses to the executive class who don't know the difference between bituminous and anthracite and have never had a backache not once in their life from bending over fixing the diesel engine on one of those on one of those D9 cats. Yeah, that's the coal industry that's going to remain. And you know what? You cannot run an entire state's economy on the jobs of 1,000 people, and it doesn't make for much of a tax base either. So, yeah, James, I think you're right. They're making millionaires who will beget billionaires who can one day run for president. And along the way, what's not going to happen is there's not going to be any relief for anybody who actually suffers under this lash. We don't need another Walmart somewhere. We need... what do we need? And that's a legitimate question for Appalachia, because the only time that Appalachia's ever been successful is the time before the coal industry, when success was measured in sustainable subsistence farming. And nobody wants to do that. One of these days, if I can find them, I've got to dig out the store ledgers from a little country store that was run by my ancestors. And it showed, it would probably be somebody's anthropology, cultural anthropology PhD dissertation. It shows what a community purchased on a day-by-day basis. All carefully laid out in a longhand script in cloth-bound ledger books. It shows you not only what people had and what they didn't have. Nobody came in to buy tomatoes. Nobody came in to buy cucumbers. Nobody came in to buy hams or sausage or eggs. They came in and they bought shotgun shells. I realize for a certain contingent, that's going to be incomprehensible, but in that era, one's shotgun and one's rifle gun were tools. They were not expressions of First, Second Amendment freedom. Wolverines! They weren't something that you carried to the polling place to make sure that the wrong coloreds weren't voting. They were things that you used to feed your family. Things like rabbits and squirrels and squirrel brain gravy. And deer. They were things you used to shoot down varmints that would kill your chickens or maybe had rabies. The hydrophobia. So they bought bullets and shotgun shells. They bought bolts, or they bought, you know, yards of cloth for the making of clothing. They bought refined sugar. White poison! Well, not if you don't eat a whole lot of it. They bought kerosene. And it's all there in those little books. And those were people who were, yes, literate. Granted, maybe most of the reading they did was in the Bible, but they were literate. You know, some of us non-believer types, I'm sure we would chuckle up our sleeves at them. But you know what they did? Because I've got the cemeteries to prove it. Mostly, they lived up into their 80s and 90s at a time when the average lifespan in the rest of the country, especially the urban areas, was somewhere around 50-something, maybe. They had extended families so that when the people who were by that time grandpa and grandma got too old to do what grandma and grandpa had spent a lifetime doing, the son or the daughter were doing the same thing and raising the next generation. And there might be four generations in a home. They probably didn't smell so good. But you know what? They were, perhaps, to a degree that is foreign to us, closer to something we resembling closer to something that we refer to as free than we are. Now here's a question. What if you took that subsistence model and brought it into the future? What if you added into that lifestyle the things we like now and have now? What happens to that sustainable subsistence farm if it has a wind turbine and some solar panels? What happens to that subsistence lifestyle if high-speed internet is available? Does that begin to look a little bit interesting? But of course, there's nothing about anything like that anywhere in those $5.56 million. And to hearken back to something Gerald said a minute ago, where's my share of that almost $500,000 in that one project? Which brings me back to the Marshall Plan. The first purpose of the Marshall Plan was to feed people and keep them from freezing to death in the winter. Because all the market-based economics and all the politics of, oh my God, the Soviet Union, take a back seat if there's nobody for them to grind their boot heel onto. So out of that $5.56 million and out of the other millions of dollars that have been given away in the power plant, you know, because I followed this. You know what's not there? Dinner. You know what's not there? A check. There's nothing in any of that about, because we do have out-of-work people in the coal industry, and there is this thing that happens to human beings where they get broken down over time. And it's not just the coal industry. Ask anybody in the construction and building trades. It will make you old before your time. God knows it happens in the oil and gas patch. Hard work will make you old before your time. And it'll make you a little bit cynical every time one of those people in a goddamn bespoke suit on the television set says, "Well, you know, I think we can raise the Social Security retirement age because people are living longer now." Nah, dipshit, my ancestors lived longer than you will. But that's a different story. People do get broken down. And this is where me being a socialist or maybe even a commie or a Marxist or something kind of comes into play. People need a check. People need money. They don't need a strategic plan to develop a feasibility study for whether or not they should be able to have fucking dinner. Yeah, you know how it is with poor people. They just spend that money. I mean, if you just gave them money, they'd just spend it. Well, where would they spend it? Well, probably at the grocery store or something. Oh, you mean in the economy? You mean it would turn into an economic multiplier? I mean, you know, when the bulk of it's not going back to Bentonville, in Arkansas, that is, or Cincinnati, Ohio. Appalachia doesn't need another damn study. And neither do most of the communities that have in one way or another fallen apart. The little towns that fell apart when the mill moved to Mexico. Okay, so maybe we're going to figure out a way to put in and... No. People need taken care of. Get this. And you know, maybe this is a legacy from the Marshall Plan. Instead of developing a program plan, feasibility study project for what to do in the refugee crisis, the European Union has come up with a plan to provide Syrian refugees in Turkey with debit cards and $375 million. $375 million for 1 million of the neediest Syrian refugees in Turkey. With that debit card, people can buy whatever they want, food, medicine, clothing, And yeah, they can go to an ATM and get cash, and there won't be some goddamn Republican from Kansas standing there having a conniption about whether or not they're buying food or, you know, good, you know, a nice, you know, a nice pile of grape leaves, or maybe, you know, some canned, pre-cooked, stuffed grape leaves. What a wildly different approach. I mean, I think it's at least fair to ask the question, what would happen? And should we put an age limit on it? If you're out of work from the coal industry and you're 50 years old, what can American capitalism really ask of you anymore? You've destroyed your health and your body, and you're really past retraining. So is it really too much to say, you know, we're going to give you $1,500 a month? And by the way, that's not terrible money in southern West Virginia. We're going to give you Title II disability Social Security money. Because if you don't, if we don't, we're just going to be condemning a lot of people for around here. I mean, statistically insignificant for the rest of the country, and most of the rest of the country doesn't care anyway. But we're going to be condemning them to a pretty miserable existence. Asa asks, will the Syrian refugees be able to buy Alaskan king crab legs with the commie ATM cards, Bob? Kind of depends on how devout they are now, doesn't it? I didn't think they could. I thought that was like harumph or whatever. But I'm sure. I'm sure there's surely to God somewhere in the European Union they've got the equivalent of Louis Gohmert who will ask that question. And that's part of the larger problem, is people who have never known a day's hunger in their lives worrying about how other people are going to not be hungry. So when Trey Crowder says, no, I don't give a damn. For far too many people in America, rednecks are either the butt of a joke or a tool to be used to leverage power. He's right. But then again, the question is what? You know, I talk like this, and by the way, let me add that it's not just out of work coal miners that need help. It's a whole bunch of people in Appalachia, you know, not because they're too lazy to work, but there's nothing for them to do. I mean, skills that used to obtain in the whole country, just there's no need for them anymore. I remember Mr. Stress talking about the time he spent as a TV repairman. And I think about the TV repairman shop that was down the street from where I grew up. There's no such thing as a TV repairman anymore. Tailors. Seamstresses. It's kind of gender biased, I'm sorry. Nobody was ever a seamster. Seamstresses. And oddly enough, you would think you would think that that would be a valuable skill. Do we mend clothing anymore? You know, that verb exists to darn socks. And that is to know a particular stitch with which to, you know, fix a hole in a pair of socks. No, we don't darn socks. Because, you know, we can just go down to the Dollar General and for $8 or $9 get 12 or 13 pair that were made by somebody chained to a table in, oh, I don't know, Honduras, or, you know, maybe Vietnam, or possibly Bangladesh, who made 3 cents a day doing it. So why darn socks? Goddamn dryer's just going to eat them anyway, because we're going to put them in the dryer. We're not going to hang them on the line. And I guess a lot of these things just show my age. You know, for all of her conservative values, I can't imagine Miss Aggrieved White Privilege 2016, Tommy Lauren, sitting at home with a McCall's pattern, making the fabulous clothing that she wears on screen every night. But somewhere back in her heritage, that person probably did exist. But I guess the question I'm asking is whether there is some of that stuff that's in our past that it might be worth rediscovering. I mean, we've got one lone barber left in our little town here, and you know what? You can still get a straight razor shave from him. And I got to tell you, as a guy, it's kind of nice. You know, as long as you trust him. You know, the day that I walk in and he's you know, got the you remember Gene Wilder in the Blazing Saddles with the shaking hand. That's the day that, you know, when I walk in and I see that, that's the day the straight razor shaves end. No, that's okay. That's okay. I'll do it myself. I mean, we still got a meat cutter up at the Wiggling Pig. If you go into Hellmart, all of their meat comes to them from some meat center, some centralized meat center, and it's sealed up and the hamburger's filled with, like, nitrogen gas or something. You know, something inert. So it'll stay fresh. Still a meat cutter over at the Kroger. But in that $5.6 million, there's nothing in there for, oh, I don't know, teaching anybody how to make a pair of pants or a dress. And yet at one and the same time, there's a booming little business down in the town where I came from. And I imagine the woman is a millionaire by now, who came back to the same area. She grew up there. I grew up there. And built an industry paying a fair wage to local women who still had the old skill sets of clothing construction. And the place is booming. And it's not because it's a right-to-work workers' paradise. It's just that she went home. And maybe that's part of it too. Maybe this is part of the cost of the brain drain of Appalachia, so that you wind up with somebody like J.D. Vance sitting in a law office out in Silicon Valley writing a book about the hillbillies. Come on home, J.D. You want to see Appalachia get better? Come back and help us make it better. I just, you know what? Maybe I've bored everybody to tears by now. But I saw that story last night, and it just it looked like, and felt like, a con that was larded with weasel words. Because, I mean, I've been through some of this stuff. I've seen these granted programs at work. I've been through a strategic plan writing workshop. But at the end of the day, no matter how good your strategic plan was, it didn't matter. It was who you knew. If you knew the right person, the strategic plan... It could have been just thrown together by fucking autocorrect. You'd get the money. But I've got this crazy notion that what once worked in this region, if you tweaked it with modern communication technology and modern energy technology, you could support a native economy that wouldn't be based on out-of-state billionaires and corporations, but might actually foster the growth of a decent, sustained, dare I even say comfortable, working class. My great-grandfather went to his grave in his 80s, and you know what? You know one word he had never used in his life? Think about this. Never once in his life did he ever have to call anybody boss. Or say yes, sir, to anybody that he wasn't affording respect as opposed to obligation. How many people in America would look at that and say, by God, that was a life worth living? We got more news than that, but hey, I've kept Todd on the line, hanging on. I just wanted to wrap all of that up. One note before we go to Todd. Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, subject line: working the work. This sort of community rehabbing and feasibility study nonsense has a long history. It typically starts in the more affluent parts of the country, eventually permeating into the more remote and/or traditional labor markets. Relatively well-heeled and credentialed professionals need something to do, an outlet for their intellectual habits, and in an economy that no longer manufactures anything or invests in its deteriorating infrastructure or public spaces, the only route left to some manner of bourgeois legitimacy is with the committee or project study, the development workup, or paperwork-generating roundtable of experts, counselors, and consulting specialists. Just imagine all the real work that's possible given an educated person who is willing to take up a shovel compared to an unemployed postgraduate desperate enough to trade credentials for full chicken pots, piles of documents for stacked bricks. But after all, even expensive degrees do often do cheap work, and it's all portable. in the end. Yep. Somebody's driveway is getting paved. You know, even in this crumbling little community I live in, you can still go down into the holler and you can tell the difference between the coal camp houses that were meant for the workers and the coal camp houses that were meant for the management. And then crowning it all on a higher piece of ground is the giant Victorian Gothic mansion that was where the one guy with all the money lived. Okay, now, let's go over and talk to Todd. Hey, Todd.
Well, Bob.
What'd I do?
That was coming from your gut, you know? And all I can say is, Griff by any other name, would it smell like that?
Man, it smells sweet when you're at the, when you're at the top of the food chain and not down where the impaction is.
I'm beginning to wonder. I really like what you were saying, and I'm going to keep this quick because I know other people might want.
This conversation radio, man. You do not have to apologize, and you do not have to hurry.
Well, sometimes I think people want to get in and whatnot. But anyway, you know, I'm wondering if this is all I can say is southeastern thing because I've only lived in the northeast and the southeast for any extended period of time, but. This, they do that where I live, this little town where I live. The city, you know, the city with what I would call the city fathers, the movers, the shakers, they just do things. They don't run it through city council. You know, they don't tell anybody. I mean, that's just straight up grip. That's like some Tammany Hall stuff. I mean, the way you described it, that is straight up grift.
Well, I mean, and you know, when you're moving around $2.04 million, somewhere along the way, you know, a little bit's there's gonna be some trickling down.
Of course,
it's not gonna trickle down the way the trickle down people say it trickles down, Todd. It's gonna trickle down into the pockets of, I mean, Jesus, you know.
Right.
I mean, West Virginia has a long history of this going back to the war on poverty. There are people who were, the thing is, there were people who were already pretty well off. War on poverty came along, and by God, they got richer still, and the poor people stayed poor.
You mean the TVA and all that?
No. I'm talking about the war on poverty, you know, part of the great society. I respect it, and it did some good work, but... You know, I guess in any institution, there's always going to be some graft.
Well, yeah. I will say this, and I've said before, I don't know if people believe me or not, but it doesn't matter because I know what I've done. And I guess I've been there many, not maybe in your area. I've looked at the map again. But West Virginia, Appalachia is a different kind of place. There's no place in America quite like Appalachia. And I think, well, and like I said, I don't know if this is a southeastern thing where they're doing this grift and graft type of thing. But like you said, there's no action words in that. You know, where are the jobs going to come from that? You can do all the studies. You don't need to do any more study. You know, in West Virginia, in my experience, it's a lot of little towns. Once you get outside of Charleston, it's just a bunch of small communities. You know, in hollers and up in the hills and whatnot, and people take care of each other. It's just that type of place. Like when you come into town, everybody knows you're in town. Like, yeah, they, you know, as a guy working in the school, he's doing observations in classrooms. You know, they know who you are before you get anywhere. Because that's just the way it is. But
Todd, there has been a time in this country when instead of running, you know, $2 million downstream to, you know, for a feasibility study of this blah 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 blah, we actually did just put people who are out of work to work, and it was called the CCC and the WPA. And well, there was significant dignity in that. And that's what we need. But the thing is, what do you, and this is the question that dogs me, maybe because it's, you know, our generation now. What do you do with somebody who's 50 years old?
Well,
who has probably, let's see, given 34 years of his life already, more than half, to capitalism. When does capitalism pay back? And does he have to just grind his bones into dust?
Well, look, that is not much to ask, especially since we're not beholden to the gold system anymore. I mean, we just really, they just, you know, we just print money out of thin air and back it up with our name. That's all we do. So it really doesn't matter. So this whole deficit debt thing is a big sham. It doesn't matter. So it's very little, because think how much one bomb cost, a drone. Look how much money we wasted on a bunch of bullshit. But I don't want to get off too far on that tangent. But yes, I understand what you're saying. And that's why people are bandying about this idea of giving folks just who aren't working or whatever, just a check. And you do what you need to do with it. You get your health insurance, you buy your food, here's your check. And I think what the see, I don't understand. Your lawmakers are fucked. They are not working in the best interest of your general area, period. They couldn't pass the budget. I mean, listen, I keep up with shit. I try to. They couldn't pass the budget.
No. It's not that they couldn't, Todd. Let's be careful with our verbs. It's not that they couldn't. They wouldn't.
Okay, they wouldn't. They wouldn't. And you're going to get me jumping around here, because I really, and Dr. O'Brien, I'm curious. Now, has he got any pushback for being an intellectual?
Oh, I'm sure it's there. We'll find out what the pushback's like on Election Day, I guess.
Okay, that was just one question I had, because it, you know, you understand why I'm asking. But,
well, sure.
So it seems like Appalachia is the perfect place to lend itself to, like, you know, break away from that mono economy of coal, and maybe have, you know, areas specialized in making certain things like solar panels, or like you were saying, or, you know, and different things that we need now. For the future, getting on the ground floor, you know, look forward, move forward, because that's the only way that region is really going to get anywhere. Light industry, you know, and between that and stop messing up the environment and pull in the tourism, because it's amazingly beautiful. The air is really fresh, and, you know, what's left of the good water is great. You know, it really is, and that's why I encourage everybody to travel through there. It's really amazing. And you know what I mean by the small community. It's really like, people are really nice. Like, you could be a total.
But Todd, I got to tell you, depending on where you go, those small communities don't exist anymore. They're gone.
Well.
I mean, Whitesville, West Virginia, used to have its own movie theater. Couple of banks, grocery store, it was a nice little community. It's gone. The storefronts are boarded up. The place is burned up with opioid abuse and addiction and death. And every mountain around it has been blown to kingdom come. And it was the mountaintop removal that killed the town.
Okay.
Because all the underground miners were let go, and they just decided to start blowing up the mountains. You know, that's the town that's nearest to Upper Big Branch, where Don Blankenship, who considers himself a political prisoner,
that was a breach, right?
That's it blew up. Maybe it's a little different in northern West Virginia. I don't get up there as often as I should.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty little places like Thomas, or Grafton, you know, are not maybe in as bad a shape. But like we were talking about last night, a little town like Grantsville, which is 30 miles from Spencer, which is 100 miles, which is 50 miles from anywhere. There's, you know, there's nothing there. Grantsville, you know, can't even keep food on the shelves. So people wind up driving 30 miles to go to Hellmart in Spencer.
God knows,
it wouldn't be that long a drive if you're ever curious. Welch, West Virginia. I mean, we have this notion that ghost towns require tumbleweeds. They don't. They don't. And Welch, West Virginia is a ghost town. And so is Williams.
Well, no wonder people are angry.
Yeah. But the thing is, they're angry at the wrong people. I mean, you go down to Welch or Williamson, and they'll say, that Obama Kenyan Muslim and his job-killing EPA. And they think that's why their town died. Well, hell, their town died because the coal industry didn't have any need for a town anymore. I mean, there's no coal workers living in the coal camp houses here in my community anymore. Just poor folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Obama didn't kill Welch or Williamson or Whitesville. The coal industry did. Because when the coal industry's done with you, they don't even leave the money on the nightstand. They just slip out the window in the dark and still of the night, and you wake up sticky, broken, confused.
Well, there wasn't too much that guy in the White House right now. I mean, he wasn't great. I put it like that. But there wasn't too much that he was able to do anyway because of the Congress. I mean, we got to start on health care, and beyond that. You know, and maybe continue the war where we shouldn't have. It just seems like, you know, our growth industry needs to get away from making bombs and
a growth industry. That's a death industry. But consider the response of the European Union to the Syrian refugees. You know, they've got an ulterior motive. They're trying to keep the Syrian refugees in Turkey. And keep them from coming on into Europe. That's pretty cynical. But they're not coming up with program feasibility study, yada yada yada. They said, "God damn, print up a million debit cards and put $375 on each one."
Right, and I'm going to stop you right there because you don't need, like you said, you don't need to be in the comments to understand what happens with that. You need food, you need shelter, you need clothes. So it's not like they have nice new vehicles where they can just drive, you know, 500, 600, 1,000 miles to go to Paris and go buy some new fashions. They're going to be buying locally, right? And that I forgot the term you used, but anyway,
an economic multiplier?
Correct, yes. So that money stays in the local economy. You know, I mean, that is non-trickle. That's why that trickle-down bullshit. That's why I keep bringing that up about Stockman or Stockton, whatever his name was. Because, I mean, anytime anybody admits that what they were touting,
was crap.
Architect. Right, exactly. You know, and these people, these people are in love with the idea of Reagan, but when you really look at it, when you dissect it, it's the antithesis of what they claim they love. You know, but it's like pulling teeth. You know, and that's what gets me kind of irritated. I'm not trying to get off track too much, but you see, the media, and like you said, I have to totally agree with you. The media has built this guy up, and he was a part of the media because he was on television, and that's one of the parts that I think people fail to realize that A lot of people watch too much TV, and they're kind of hypnotized by TV. You know, they see somebody on TV, and they think they're important, and they're this, and they're that. They must be better than me, and they must know what they're doing because they're on TV. And even though he's just a disgusting individual who is obviously a sociopath. I mean, it's just, there's no doubt about that. And the fact that the media will put their profits, like you were saying, and it's a fact, the other day, CNN, they were like, oh my God, look how much money he made the last quarter. You know, he got all that free publicity, and he's talking about, well, the media's not fair to me. I'm just a downtrodden, struggling white dude. Oh, you know, shut the fuck up. You are a sick sociopath. And he's a sociopath globally across his personality. That's the thing. That is how he operates. He has no empathy. He cannot apologize. I mean, if he apologizes, he has to put a little addendum in there. Well, it really wasn't me, though. Or I was having a bad day.
Yeah.
You know, and that's enough of the mentally ill, leathery orange fascist with the mouth. He does have.
Well, understand. Most of America wouldn't even know who he was if he had not been a reality television star. And by that rubric, I can't wait till like 30 years from now when Honey Boo Boo runs for president.
Oh, God. See?
But I mean, that's what, I mean, and, you know, shouldn't we have seen this day coming when America elected a B-movie actor who got upstaged by a fucking chimp as president of the United States?
We should have. We should have, absolutely.
I mean, isn't this just to assert, I mean, we can't see it because we're in the middle of it, but isn't Donald Trump just a logical progression?
Well, yes, and people better wake up really fast, and I don't think they are, see, because now things are so desperate. Remember, because this is the year of the outsider. You know, and he's already practicing his fascism, that person, because now he's, during his campaign, he's talking about the opening of his new hotel at the old post office in D.C. Now, that's really a truncated version of fascism. You're mixing the politics and industry together, right, before you even get started.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's some delightful stories out of that, Todd. The fact that Jose Andres, who is a world-famous restaurateur and chef, was all set to open up a restaurant inside the new hotel there, and then Trump opened up his gob about the racist Mexicans, and Jose Andres, who is a Spaniard, not a Mexican, said, no, wait a minute. And so, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe I don't know. Maybe the Trump International at 1100 Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C., I think they've got a Johnny Rockets in it now.
You mean like the airport chain?
You know.
Not pathetic. Oh, my God.
No, it's not really a Johnny. It's just some nothing place. And the other, there was supposed to be two signature, you know, classy restaurants in it. The other restaurant is just meeting space now, in a hotel that's absolutely chock full of meeting space. It's just empty. I mean, it's a room, with some carpet on it, on the floor. It's not a restaurant at all, because that guy backed out too.
Is he really, in other words, you know, he has a history, most, you know, recently all he does is lease his name to structures. Is he leasing his name to this, or is he actually managing it?
Oh, no, the Trump company, yeah, they did this. This isn't one of those where he just leased his name and they're going to take it off of there.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to think, 1100 Pennsylvania Avenue, that's only about maybe 10 blocks from the White House.
Yeah.
White House 400, right?
1600.
1600. Oh, my God.
No, I've stood many a night looking at that building, and it's a beautiful old pile of rocks. It's the old post office.
I know, and I've been there. You know,
big old tower, and you know, yesterday they were. I guess they installed bells in it because they were ringing bells. And I don't mean like outside the Walmart with the Starvation Army. I mean bong, 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 yeah, big bells.
I want to go back to the grid for a minute.
Yeah.
Now, do they put these things in the paper? What, in other words, what the movers and shakers are planning to do? Do they put news blurbs out and call people into city council meetings and so they can voice their opinions on what might be happening?
Oh, I mean, that came out of the Charleston Gazette.
But it was too late by then, or was it?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's after the money's already out. No, what they did is they put out the power plant team put out a request for requests. And I know some groups that put some proposals in, and, you know, nothing. You got to dream big. You got to dream big in order to really get your front feet in the trough on these things. And you've got to know the people who can whisper in the right ears.
See, I'm with you. What you said about the nouveau CCP type of thing, because that's exactly what should have happened, like minutes after the crash that we had, which is it was a depression as far as I'm concerned. They call it a recession. That was a depression. And that's the first thing we should have done. And we still need to be doing that. But our Congress, you know, the House and the Senate, they're so dysfunctional where, you know, they weren't going to pass anything like that.
Well, no, the Republicans don't believe in it.
But that's what the fuck are they? All right.
They don't believe in just giving people money. But they also don't believe in the government putting up a program using government money to pay people money. Now, if you would come up with a CCC where you block granted billions of dollars to the states to make the block grants the personal fief province of Republican governors who could hand it out as graft payments and say that they were giving people jobs, Republicans would be all for that.
That's because they always have to have their hand in the honeypot. That's what I'm saying.
Right. No. Well, the art of being a Republican is not getting your front feet in the trough. The art of being a fiscal conservative Republican is getting the back trotters in there with them, Todd. You ever seen a hog with all 4 feet in the trough? That's a happy, happy hog. And can't no other hogs get nowhere near the trough.
Are you being serious?
Deadly.
That's the way they work. Well, that's, you know, apparently that's the way they're operating. But how do they think that, you know, come on, Eisenhower, man, he was a Republican. But we have this wonderful interstate highway system.
Yeah, but I started out talking about the Marshall Plan. If you go read the history of the Marshall Plan, what you'll find out is that when it was proposed and when it was backed at a hell of a lot higher amount of money than eventually went into the Marshall Plan because the Republicans gutted it. They didn't want a bunch of free money going over to rebuild Europe because that meant less money, you know, less money for their graft.
They've gotten away with this nonsense for way too long. It's smoke and mirrors with them. They want everything given to them. In other words, They will talk shit about welfare, which if you look at the pie chart, we don't even have any welfare anymore. Let's get that straight. There really is no welfare anymore. But if you look at a pie chart, it is such a slim sliver of the economy. But the welfare is huge. You know, why are we subsidizing companies to go overseas? They can break down their equipment. They can subsidize the training of new people who will be working overseas. And they get the owners of the factory, they get a tax break for that. Now, you know, this is what we need to be fighting against. But apparently it's not working on our side. I don't know what the problem is. I mean, these people are entrenched. You know, they refuse to even nominate a damn.
Yeah, but remember, okay? I mean, West Virginia's corrupt government didn't pass out these grants. These were passed out by a committee, you know, under the aegis of the Obama administration. It's more than a Democrat or a Republican problem. It's more like what Steve was talking about in China. It's an entrenched mentality about where the money's going to go because of a mindset about who needs the money. Okay, so I mean, like, let's say let's take one of those $300,000 plans in the list there, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Some single mom who's got four kids to feed is not going to get any of that money. It's going to go to probably somebody with, you know, crippling student debt and maybe a master's degree working on a PhD who has no calluses on her hands.
Right. Right.
And it's going to go, it's going to pay for thinking, not doing.
And they may not even use the plan. That's the thing.
Right. The plan doesn't even actually have to do anything.
No.
I mean, we're going to write a plan about whether it's going to be feasible to create a bike path from Fayette County to Nicholas County.
Feasibility study, you know.
No. It's a plan for how to get the feasibility study. It's not the study itself. That's another layer.
See.
And I'm probably going to get some grief about this somewhere down the road. That's okay. I mean, you know, the idea here is to try to work through things. I mean, would a bike path on old railroad tracks from Fayette County to Nicholas County, West Virginia, be a valuable addition to the tourism economy here? Damn straight it would.
Of course. Who doesn't know that? Read the national papers. That's the biggest thing going. Rail to trail. You know, in other words, you take these dilapidated railroad tracks. You're not using it anymore. It's different ways to do it.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about a 5-county ATV trail up in I don't know. I saw the counties, whatever. Well, heck, our buddy Greg out in San Diego might put his ATV on the trailer in San Diego and drive it all the way to West Virginia just to ride for a couple of weeks on the trails through the Appalachians. I'm told it's great fun. And so that's a great thing to do. And yeah, there's some study that has to go into it. I acknowledge all of that. But is that really the front end of dealing with an economic transition in a time of absolute crisis? I mean, that's the kind of thing you do when you're planning out in front of something. We're not in front of that curve in Appalachia. We are miles behind it.
You used the right word. You used the C word, crisis. See, that's the thing. Because the sickness started happening in the 70s, like everywhere. But, it, you know, yeah, it you know, it started in the 70s. Yeah.
And West Virginia, Todd, West Virginia was warned in the 70s that this day was coming. But we've got a political class that said we've always had coal. We're always going to have coal. The only problem is we didn't always have coal. It's like there's some sort of Orwellian memory hole that's opened up here where nobody can remember that the people nobody can remember that there was a time before the coal mines.
Yeah, I like what you were saying about self-sustainability. You know, there's something to be said for that. And I think we'll just slow down with tearing up the environment. You know, it would be nice to get back to that. Because there are people who want to live in a place like that. There are people who want to settle there. Even if they have to start in a yurt. You know, that's okay with them.
No, the history of West Virginia is a history of people. I mean, some of the first settlers here literally lived in a hollow tree. Others lived in caves. Well, I mean, because the people who were already here didn't feel too kindly toward the invaders.
All spelunking aside, that I totally get it, and I just don't know what is going on with folks, man. You know, but I'm worried because look, we got all these people following somebody who's obviously mentally ill, and he's going to win your state. You know, so they're desperate. Obviously, people are desperate, and desperate times call for desperate measures, but not that type of. Desperate measure. But so are you going to write an editorial to the paper?
No, this is my editorial. I mean, this is how I get it out of my system.
Well, I you know, it's just so much. I see a lot of opportunity, you know, because, you know, you've got the hardwood and that the gorge that you talk about, that's amazing. When people get excited, there's a whole segment of the population that get excited about things like that. And there's a lot of millennials.
And you know where we are now that we've got a few decent interstates. West Virginia is six to eight hours from millions and millions and millions of potential visitors.
See, that should be the thrust. That should be the thrust.
I mean. You're less than 8 hours from me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not that far. I was not that far from there, 2 months ago.
Most West Virginians know how far it is to South Carolina because they beat a hot path there every summer.
All right, they go to Myrtle Beach. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And yet when I was down there, last year, there was a woman driving our bus to the racetrack who said, "Oh, I go up there as often as I can."
To Darlington?
Yeah. She said, "Oh, we go up there. That New River Gorge is just beautiful. It ain't nothing down here like that."
No, you know, it's just hills and sand here. And see, that's it. See, you can ship the city. We got nothing but sand. Ship some of this sand to West Virginia, turn it into melt it down. With solar panel.
We had a humongous glass industry here, and there's still a little bit of it left. I mean, Fiesta Ware?
Yes.
That's here.
Yeah.
Made by union people, even.
Get out of here. I have a Fiesta Ware plate. That's those enamel, the camping plates, I think. Isn't that Fiesta? It looks like Mexican.
It's just all kinds of all kinds of gorgeous colors, and you know, it's like a ceramic.
Yeah, pastel colors. Yeah, and granite. Well, I'm just saying, you know, people have to think forward. I mean,
But there's another layer to that. I mean, the tourism economy, Todd, is great, but the tourism economy, and I mean, I know this because I know the people who work in it. For the most part, the tourism economy runs on the backs of people who make, you know, $8.75 an hour for 7 months out of the year.
That won't cut it.
You can work for $8 an hour and no tips at one local joint that sells pizzas for $25 a piece. And a single draft beer will set you back $6.
Oh, no, I'm not. Listen, it better be some really good beer. No,
$6. It's good. It's good beer, and the pizza's fabulous. And 9 of the best wings you ever ate in your life are, you know, $10.
But you're in a beautiful place.
But the people who are doing the heavy lifting on all of that are making $8 an hour. Maybe.
Well,
that's not an economy, Todd.
Look, they need to take lessons from, look at Asheville and places in that area, because I'm telling you, and even the upstate here, Greenville, you know, they've got their craft beer industry, and people, they got the brew pubs are a great thing. You need to take your kids there. They got the wood-fired pizzas. You know, make it family-friendly. You know, and someplace, you know, places like that in the mountains. And then, you know, they need to open up the cannabis industry, because you're living in the, what I call the East Coast Green Triangle. You know, they got the Green Triangle over there in Northern California, Southern Oregon, blah, blah, blah. So, you touch probably the Green Triangle on the East Coast, because I know folks that go down to Tennessee and, you know, that area to do their thing or whatever. If that's what they want to do. I'm not into that. But, you know, that's how they make their money. So, you know, there's options. There are options out here. But people have to, you know, you have to think outside the box, because these are different times. And the jobs that people used to have are not coming back. The coal is done. Forget about it. And stop thinking about the goddamn coal.
Well, we got to be careful how we talk about that, though, Todd, because the coal ain't gone. It's not all gone. The good stuff in southern West Virginia is damn sure gone. But the way they're going to go about getting it, the way that people here know it, is gone. It doesn't take 100-man crew to run an 8-hour shift anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It takes 11 guys, 5 years, with heavy explosives and heavy equipment, to take down 5,000 acres.
But are you talking about the good, hard anthracite?
No. There's no. Anthracite is Pennsylvania. Bituminous is West Virginia.
Oh, yeah, thank you for correcting me. I don't want to.
But I mean, But I mean, you get my point.
Yes, I do. Yeah. Well, you know, Yeah, well, anyway, your Philip option was very touching and informative. And, you know, just, I don't know if that your lawmakers are helping. It just doesn't seem like
they're useless as tits on a tree. But, you know, but the mindset has to change. I mean, we got to get rid of the Republicans in our legislature, but the three that I'm going to be voting for here in a few days have an average age of, I think, 84.
Holy cow.
So there's not going to be a lot of new thinking coming from them.
They're going to be thinking about where's the nearest bathroom. Maybe. Oh. Well, that's why I'm glad that Dr. O'Brien is putting his name in the ring. He, you know, no matter how it works out, you gotta try to do something. You know, you gotta do something. And you know, even though I'm not there, you know, we're all connected. Everybody's connected, no matter how you cut it. This is, you know, just like we need universal health care. I don't call it single payer because I think it's confusing to some people. But we need universal health care, because why do you think you get that dollar burger at McDonald's? You know, somebody had to show up for work and they're sick and they might have TB, but they're going to work making that burger because they can't, they got to get car insurance, rent, child care. And if they miss one day, that's a bill that they're not able to pay. But they're going to call from your burger because they had to be at work because they can't take a day off. So there needs to be a paradigm shift, like on the macro level. And on the micro level. So, that's just what I think. And you know, it's a mindset. We have to, you know, make a shift. This is not 60s and 70s and 50s anymore. It's just not, it's not there. And, and the, And the the folks at the top, they kept squeezing us ever since right before Reagan. Like, well, you know, we have to really rethink these union contracts, and you're going to have to make some concessions because you need to keep jobs here. And we're like, okay, fine, we'll do it. And you look at the charts, and we're so productive. Our workers are more productive than almost anybody in the world. You know, we're right there with Germany. But we're not seeing the pay. Where's the pay? Where is the pay?
And therein lies the rub.
Well, I was really impressed with your filibuster, but
I appreciate it. I appreciate it very much, Todd. You have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You too.
All right,
you
take
too.
Care. Bye now.
All right.
Our buddy Todd there calling from South Carolina, Stan. Hey, quick fundraising update, because, you know, we're in a pretty deep hole. Thanks going out to Karen and to Robert in Australia and to Ralps for jumping in. Remember, every new subscriber gets $11 added to their subscription for the first month, courtesy of Ralps, between now and Election Day. And we've got two more slots, courtesy of Harold, President and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, who will add $5, round up your subscription by $5 for the whole rest of the next year. Okay? For two new subscribers. Just click the box over there that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And thanks to what has come in this evening, as I mentioned, Karen and Robert and Ralphs. Karen subscribed, and so Karen's going to get the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society roundup and bumper stickers. So, all told, we have $466 in fundraising to go this evening, so that we won't have a $666 and, you know, fundraising goal tomorrow evening. Let's keep it rolling, though, and run out into the 310 area code. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm good, Rick. How about you?
I am doing fine. I had to talk to somebody. I was listening to the Norman Goldman show and tried to get through to him and couldn't. Apparently there's breaking legal news. Apparently the Mahler defendants were all acquitted.
Yes, I saw that about an hour ago. They got acquitted, but it's not as easy as it may seem.
Okay.
Apparently there's already a stink. Because the lawyer for the Bundy Bunch,
mm-hmm,
apparently got taken into U.S. Marshal custody.
Oh.
For jumping up and screaming in the courthouse after the announcement of the verdict that they're free to go, they're free to go. Well, no, they're not. There's a hold on them, because the stupid little treasonous bastards still have to stand trial in Utah.
Or is it Nevada? Or
I mean, sorry, not Utah. Nevada. Yes, Nevada.
These are the Ammon and the other fellows.
Ammonium nitrate Bundy and Cloven. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Or I mean Ryan. Yeah. Ryan. Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan and Ammon. Yeah.
And boy, I tell you what, this trial must have been a real circus. They acquitted them. They acquitted them of doing what they admitted they did.
Exactly.
there was, I guess, a jury finding that they didn't prevent federal workers from being able to go and do their jobs.
So I guess people from now on can basically do armed takeovers of federal preserves.
Well, no, I wouldn't.
Interfered with the ability to do their jobs.
No, Rick, I wouldn't go that far.
It's not presidential, I realize.
I don't know if you saw the live feed from North Dakota today, but apparently, if you are an indigenous person trying to protect unceded land,
mm-hmm,
they'll come in and they'll shoot at you.
Yeah, Well, the difference is there. You're not white, or you know they have too much melanin in their skin, you know. Right.
Or maybe have been living here for just a few thousand years too long.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I mean, OJ got off after all, and you know the way this country has been going. And the proliferation of these white supremacist organizations and these crazy sovereign citizens organizations. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be that surprised. And look at all the people, all the Trumpansies out there.
This couldn't have come at a worse time, Rick.
I know.
Because see, the other part of this is that if you look around, there's a story out there about this plan going forward for Trumpansies who are calling themselves vote protectors.
Oh, yes.
With dummied up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up, ginned up, official looking ID tags to accost voters at the polls to ask them polling questions.
Yeah.
With video rolling, this is Horace Q. Thumbfuck reporting for Vote Protectors. I'm in Busted Knuckle, Oklahoma, talking to people about election fraud. Let's see what they have to say. Donald Trump has expressed concern about the possibility of a rigged election. President Obama dismissed these concerns, stating that he doesn't even know what that means and referred to it as a conspiracy theory. Would you say that concern over election fraud is legitimate? Do you think it will be a problem in the upcoming presidential election?
That sounds like one of those ads that Donald has on TV. You know, call 1-800 whatever if you agree.
It's a
you know?
Script, Rick. It's a script.
Yeah.
From a bunch of freaks calling themselves "Stop the Steal."
Hmm. Okay. And they're not baseball catchers for the Cubs.
No, and Stop the Steal is, of course, run by Roger Stone.
Yeah.
And is in collaboration with the Vote Protectors.
True the Vote last election that was big. I know.
Oh, they're still out there.
Are they? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like if people can do this kind of thing without repercussions, I mean, just think of all the damages these people caused. At least they'll have judgments against them, civil judgments, but good luck collecting that from them. You know what I'm saying? For all of the property they destroyed, the public property and the waste they caused to the public land. But, it's like, if they were black, of course, Bob, we know they would have gotten shot. They would have, like, lasted probably 2 days there, you know, before the heavy tanks and the military type assault vehicles showed up and, basically mowed them down, you know? And,
yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know,
well,
it's
and that's,
white privilege.
It, I took a
white privilege.
I took a quick peep at Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And people are picking up on that pretty quick. Noting the difference between Standing Rock and the Oregon standoff.
Right. Well, I mean, maybe the people at Standing Rock, they should have gone in there with weapons, you know?
Oh, no. Wait. Because one of the Standing Rock protesters was alleged, and, you know, anytime these things happen, you know that the other side will try to salt in a few agents provocateurs.
Yeah, sure.
Was alleged to have reached out and taken the pepper spray away from a cop and hosed his white ass down with his own pepper spray, blinding him for 10 minutes.
Oh, jeez.
And the sheriff immediately said, "See, this proves that this here protest ain't nothing peaceful about it."
Yeah. Right. Yeah, what can I say? I mean, I'm, You know, this is America, Bob, right?
By the white people, of the white people, and for the white people.
That's right. That's right. If they're 3/5, we're 5/3, right?
I guess it works out that way. Now, I'm not a math guy, but yeah.
Oh, geez, I tell you. You know, it's just, well, that adds up to 1, right? Or that adds up to 2, I guess. 3/5 plus 5/3 equals 2.
I think it does, by God.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I really can't.
You must have been a math major before you went to law school, Rick.
Yeah, not exactly, but I do practice tax law, at least on certain radio programs.
Oh, wait. Oh, I know. Wait, no, you're a lawyer. You can divide anything by 3.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
You know all about them thirds.
Oh, yeah, the contingency fees. Yeah. Yeah, I know all about the tenths as well, like tenths of an hour and so forth, you know, that we bill in the increments, you know.
Oh, yeah, which means that you can also multiply and divide by 6.
There you go. Yeah. That's right.
Yep.
That's right. So I guess the longer term implications of this, Bob, I mean, you know, it seems like, you know, public lands are open to whoever the hell, you know, whatever white person feels like occupying them. I mean, that's the lesson I draw from that. As long as you can get one or two sovereign citizens on your jury to, you know, to basically, although I guess these people were acquitted, it just wasn't hung. It was only hung on, I guess, the last of the eight counts, which the judge then dismissed.
Yeah, they just decided to turn the Freedom Protectors loose.
So there were a whole lot of sovereign citizens on that jury, is my guess, you know? and you'd think that if it was held in a place like Portland, the trial, that you'd have gotten at least more normal people, you know, on that jury. You know? I mean, I have no idea what the jury instructions looked like. I mean, it's,
well, what? The defense lawyer, though, Jesus Christ, really?
You're free to go?
Yeah, just deciding to usurp the. I guess it was his own little Mahler standoff in the courtroom, decided he was going to be the judge for a while.
Right. Instead of doing the usual, you know, like you have to go be processed and, you know, have your bail exonerated and whatever, and then you can be released if you don't have charges pending elsewhere, right? But, I mean, Ammon and Ryan, I mean, you know, I have a feeling that those cats aren't going to get as good a reception in Nevada, because Nevada is the place where O.J. has come up in 13 years to the date after he was acquitted in L.A. I have a feeling that, you know, what happens in Nevada, I guess, stays in Nevada, and you stay in the tank in Nevada. So, you know, I sure hope that, you know, that they get people with half a brain on the jury, you know, in the Nevada case, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
And, I mean, this kind of stuff, you know, you get, like, a major acquittal like this, and this kind of stuff spreads like wildfire. There was a guy, a tax protester advocate advisor named Joseph Bannister, who was acquitted of filing a tax evasion. And he was convicted, I think, only of the lesser charge of, like, filing a false return, which was, like, a misdemeanor. You know, once he got acquitted, everybody was, you know, citing his case as, like, precedent, which it really isn't in a, you know, it's just another jury case, you know. But, you know, but you basically give these people enough credence or enough...
give them enough rope and they'll hang you with it.
Exactly. And they run off with it and then they're off to the races and, you know, it becomes a real problem. You know, that's why when I was a government tax attorney, I advocated, you know, for these people who were sovereign citizens. They were citizens of the California Republic, but not of the United States. I was in favor of, like, shipping all of those guys out to, like, the, you know, one of those radioactive atolls in the South Pacific where we tested nuclear bombs, and they could have their own country there. Here you go. We'll ship you out here, and now you're free, You're free of all of the, you know, federal obligations, and you know, you can live free here on the this atoll, you know.
Yeah.
But I never got anywhere with that proposal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I don't know if you had talked about this on your program yet or not.
No, I hadn't brought it up because I've been all wrapped up in my own little topic there, but. I saw it hit as the program began, and I knew we would be talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, what can I say? You know, I guess the stupidity of the American people never ceases to amaze me, you know? And I just, you know, I just hope they're not so stupid as to put, you know, Trump a snortus Rex in the White House, you know?
I'm not taking anything for granted. I saw that Florida is apparently back in play.
That's what CNN says.
Yeah,
has it as leaning down.
Yeah, he's up by, yeah, CNN says he's up by a skosh.
Hmm. Well, that was the latest poll in Florida. You got to kind of average all the polls. But, I mean, it's, you know, what Hillary does have going for her is she does have a get out the vote operation, and Trump doesn't have at all anything at all. You know,
no, but there I highly recommend, Rick, that you run over to Bloomberg Business.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of a long reader, but it's well worth it, I think. Inside the Trump bunker with 12 days to go, and it lays out their online effort.
Okay.
And I tweeted it out earlier today saying that, I keep saying that he's not gone on November 9th, even if he loses.
Right.
And this validates everything that I have said.
Right. Right. I mean, has he registered a trademark for the name Trump TV yet?
I don't know about that, but I do know that, as the article points out, the data that they have belongs to him November 9th, no matter what.
Oh, okay, okay.
And he has millions of ways.
And not the Republican Party. Okay. Well, you know, I think he's got to go into media, Bob, because I think he's basically ruined his name for purposes of real estate. Like, who the hell is going to want to, you know, pay to put the name Trump on your luxury hotel? You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's why they're going to start calling it Scion, S-C-I-O-N.
Oh, seriously? That's the new name, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's a nod toward toward the Trump children and their brilliance.
Oh, I see. Okay, okay. They should just put Lucky Sperm Club instead. Name it Lucky Sperm Club Hotel or something like that, you know?
Well, yeah, but I don't know how lucky. I got a story here Sparky sent me. Let's see. A man is suing, a story out of the Miami Herald. A man is suing Trump, the Trump Hotel, I think, at Doral.
Okay.
Jose Lambert writes at the Miami Herald, "Don't let the bedbugs bite. We'll never sound the same for business traveler Eric Linder after his March stay at Trump National Doral Miami Resort. Linder is suing presidential candidate Donald Trump's resort, claiming he was attacked by voracious bedbugs during his night in one of the property's fancy Jack Nicklaus-themed villas." I don't know what a Jack Nicklaus-themed villa means. I mean, what does that mean? There's a big picture of Jack Nicklaus on the ceiling over the bed or something? According to the Linder suit, the insects left dozens of swollen welts on his face, neck, arms, and back and made him wary, not weary, damn it. Copy editing is still dead, even at the Miami Herald. Made him wary of staying in hotels, even five-star ones, like Trump's Doral.
Oh, geez.
And, of course, five-star, you know, I was deceived by Trump's image, Linder said. It's a five-star resort where this shouldn't happen. It was really traumatic. Trust me when I tell you it's horrible to wake up in the morning and understand that bugs were crawling all over you all night. It's a nightmare.
Oh, God. And don't they burrow under your skin as well, Bob?
The thing with bed bugs is that most people don't even respond to them. But if it turns out that you are allergic to them, you are in hell.
Oh, jeez. Okay. How about you? Do you know if you're allergic to bed bugs?
I found out the hard way.
Oh, jeez. So what's your bed bug story? Do you have one or not?
My hands swelled up half again their normal size.
Oh, jeez.
It was terrible.
Was it like a bad motel you stayed at or something like that, or what?
Yep.
Okay. Oh, jeez. Well, I guess they leave the light on for the bed bugs, right, Bob? we'll leave the light on.
But I mean, it's brutal if you are allergic. No laughing matter.
So the effects last for how long then? That once you get like bit by the bed bugs,
days, a few days.
Wow, a
couple
okay.
days.
Do you
and,
put like
and
calamine
it it,
lotion
it, itch,
on,
it itches and burns and. I was practically dipping myself by the heel in Benadryl cream.
Oh, jeez. Wow. Oh.
Yeah, Linder said, I went to an urgent care clinic, and they had me cover my body with an ointment for 24 hours. Then I went to my doctor once I got home, and he put me on antibiotics.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
And this guy refused to leave with the clothes he had at the resort, including several suits for business meetings, because he was scared to death he was going to take the bugs back home.
Well, hell yeah, you just burn whatever shit you have, you know? Forget about that, you know? You burn it right there in the hotel room, you know?
You know, they're tiny little bastards.
Are they like the size of fleas or what, Bob?
Smaller,
seriously?
Yeah.
Wow, fleas are small.
And
wow.
And they tend to live in, like, mattresses.
Okay.
And yeah. in dark joint spaces, you know.
Okay. Wow. Oh. Well, I guess, is it still a five-star hotel? I imagine it is.
Oh, yeah. And they'll probably, if he's suing them, they'll probably counter-sue him for defamation of resort.
Yeah. Yeah, sort of like the Texas cattleman tried to sue Oprah years ago, right? For... impugning their, you know, I forget what was it called? I forget what the cause of action was against the Texas beef, you know?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
They had a very funny term for it. It was very strange.
And it wasn't tortious interference with business relations, was it?
No. It was like a, it was almost like a libel claim, I think, or something like defamation of, I don't know what it was, but wow. Well, you know, I'm just waiting for this thing to get over with. I'm just hoping that the Senate can be taken over by the Democrats, because if it isn't, we are screwed, even if Hillary wins, just from the standpoint of not getting any justices confirmed, at least according to Grandpa McCain and, you know, the tone that the Republicans are striking.
Well,
now.
Some Republican... who was it? I can't remember offhand. Said, well, there's precedent for just leaving that seat open.
Yeah, right. Right. I guess the Cato Institute, I guess this his name is Ilya something, claims that, you know, there's no need to fill the vacancies. But haven't they looked at Article 3, Section 1, the first sentence there? The first sentence of Section 1?
You mean the
one,
president right? shall?
Well, no, about the fact that there shall be a Supreme Court. And such inferior courts as Congress may, you know, designate.
Well, but you know where I stand on this. I'm real nerdy about it. I think Merrick Garland should put on his little black robe and his little black shoes. And just take a walk up Constitution Avenue,
mm-hmm.
and walk in and say, "Hi, gang! I've been appointed. The Senate consented by its silence. So where's my chair?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
I mean, it's doable under. If you look at the language, it's doable.
Yeah, well, he could do that. You know, ideally not until after the election, but that would kind of make for interesting, you know, post-election. A post-election consequence, but he won't do that. You know, he'll just go back to being a D.C.
No, because that would cause a constitutional crisis. And even though a constitutional crisis, you know, the Constitution has the mechanism for dealing with them built in, you know, oh, no, right. We could never have that. Because frankly, I would love to see the brand-new Republican House of Representatives spend lots of energy impeaching him for something the Senate wouldn't do.
Yeah, that would be interesting. That would be ironic, you know. The goddess of irony would definitely.
And then it moves over to the Senate, and they can't get the votes to convict.
So he basically stays in,
and he sits on the court. Oh yeah, okay. Thanks, Steve from Georgia. Stan reminding me. Yeah, it was Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the booger-eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who took who waited a long time to become an American. Said that, we can just leave that seat empty. And he also went and said, I'm going to block all of Hillary's nominees.
There you go.
Dick.
Well, you know, what's wrong with having a court of 8 members? I mean, you know, after all, there never is a deadlock with an 8-8, with a 4-4, with a 4-4 court, Bob, as we know, under the new math, the new Republican math, right?
Yeah. It's a pity that FDR ruined court packing for us.
Yeah, no kidding. He wanted what? He wanted, like, was it 13? 11 or 13?
11
okay.
or 13,
wow.
I can't recall.
Yeah, it was crazy, the number. Well, it wasn't crazy, but it was a couple. No, I think it was 13. I think it was like 4 more.
By the way, I think the phrase you were looking for, Randy in PA has kindly provided. It was an ag gag suit.
Oh, well, that was one of them. That's a little different. That's where you can't. That's where you can't photograph like down scenes of downer cows being like, you know, slaughtered for, you know, beef consumption, that kind of thing. You know, like the PETA people would go in there and, you know, they'd sign up to be, you know, work at a slaughterhouse or whatever, or, you know, for chickens or cows or whatever, and just so they could take video. So that, you know, there are ag gag laws that I think are on the books, including in my former home state of Iowa. And I still can't figure out what my former compatriots see in Donald Trump that I don't, you know?
Oh, he's going to make America great again, and you don't want America to be great.
Well, of course I don't, because I'm a communist.
Well, yeah, when you get a chance, go back and listen to the front end of the filibobster, and I think it'll all come together for you, Rick.
I will do that, Bob. Well, there's probably other people waiting to get in, so I'll say sayonara until Friday, okay? I guess tomorrow.
Tomorrow,
and
the front porch.
I turn 54 tomorrow.
God almighty. Okay, so you're a couple of months older than me.
Yeah, I'm having a death by chocolate cake here for my birthday party here at the office. So,
well, save some for the front porch.
I will ship some, also to the Queen of the Minions as well, and to the lady cab driver and all my other friends there on the porch.
All right, you take it easy, Rick.
Hey, you too. Take care, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
All right, and now let's check in with Thomas at FYINation.com. Yeah, too quick, wasn't I?
Just a little bit too quick. I didn't unmute. Oh, Lord. I had a whole show planned, and then the Bundy thing happened.
Yeah, don't you hate it? Don't you hate it when breaking news rewrites your program?
Yeah. So the whole second hour of the program, for anybody who wants to call in, we're going to have open lines to discuss it.
Okay, that sounds good.
So at 10 o'clock, we're going to, because I didn't really have anything planned for the second hour, and now I have something planned for the second hour. I just wanted to call in, and I can't, with everything going on in Indian country right now, and now this, And with Black Lives Matter and everything else, I just don't, I don't know what's wrong with this country, Bob.
We've only got 14 minutes here, so I don't think we can answer that inquiry in that amount of time, but you know.
I just I wanted to call because I was frustrated with that, and also I'm not going to be on the air tomorrow because I sent you an email about it reply at your leisure, but we're doing our first annual spooktacular on a mischief night. I'm going to be on the air from 9 a.m. till midnight on Sunday.
You're just a glutton for abuse, aren't you?
Yeah. So we're going to take calls. I already have a few of our regular hosts for the network lined up to be with us starting at 9. So it's going to be interesting. And with this Fundy thing breaking, I'm sure that people will want to talk about that on the weekend. So I'm hoping that it's not just going to be politics. I mean, ghost stories.
Well,
too.
And don't forget, Mike Pence's plane skidded off the runway in New York today. Sadly, Mike Pence is reported to be just fine. I guess it was the hand of sweet baby Jesus that kept him safe.
Was that Hillary or Trump trying to kill him? I'm confused.
Well, you know. Oh, Clinton body count. Hill not Jill, Jill not Hill, damn it.
Don't tell me how to vote, Bob.
No, that's your job. Yeah, you took that over.
Well, yeah. And I still haven't, I got no hate mail for my birthday, so I kind of bummed out about that. No birthday hate mail. So that sucked. Turned 39, nothing. I guess I got to wait till I'm 40 to get hate mail. Is that what it is?
You know, that or, you know, you could always go out there and invite right wingers to participate in your program. And
oh, well, see, I did that, and that got me called a drunk lesbian. So,
everybody knows you're a sober lesbian.
Well, yeah, because I do that best. Snatch game, hello.
You know, I try to get through a program keeping it classy and. I can always count on you.
Well, you know, I gotta make sure that I keep it in the underbelly of the liberal.
Right. We've got to keep this program's NSFW rating.
Yes. Definitely. But no, I saw that and I couldn't. Man, I have no words. They're all, you know, even the. The right wing radio freak. Now we got another one on the air again. I mean, come on, really? I just only thought we finally got rid of one. We're gonna have another one on the air again. It's just sad.
You know, bed bugs.
Yeah.
Malloy says, if it ain't lice, it's bed bugs.
Yep. Yeah, right. But, if any of the hornistas want to come along and be told how to vote this Sunday from 9 a.m. till midnight, it should be interesting. Well, and I'm medicated now, so that's always awesome.
Good stuff.
So, yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. ADHD and fun stuff.
Not sniffling as anywhere near as much as, say, you know, Trump in a debate. So you got work to do.
Well, yeah, but I'm not running for president yet. You know, so give me another 2 years, and we'll get there.
You gotta wait more than two, don't you?
Well, yeah, true. Well, I'm 40, or almost 40. Well, my daughter's mother.
Don't you have to be 44?
No, 35.
President?
Yeah, 35.
Okay.
Yeah, so I could run or walk slowly, gently into the night, but like Gary Johnson. that was a fun story yesterday. He's just dying on the vine.
Well, I mean, you know, when you're running mate, just, you know, fuck it. Vote for Hillary, please.
I mean,
but you know, William Weld is not your everyday garden variety Republican.
No, no. And there were, if you've watched any of the coverage of them, there were interview points where Weld just kind of sat back in the back of his chair and closed his eyes.
Oh, no, I watched a couple of them where I was pretty sure that he was blinking Morse code.
Help me get me out of here.
Yeah.
What have I done?
SOS, you know.
Yeah. You know, wanted to be on Mike Pence's plane.
Oh, God. Yeah.
See, I keep it classy. You know?
Yeah.
Gotta keep it classy. But I just wanted to, you know, call and let you know that America is free to move around the, I guess, wildlife preserve.
White America, you are now free to invade a bird sanctuary.
Yes, but bring stacks, otherwise we'll send dildos.
Bring dildos.
They might need them. Cocks not glocks there, Bob.
Was that the hashtag? Was it really?
Yes, cocks not glocks. But the prayer warriors and the water protectors are getting pummeled by the National Guard, and these people are getting set free. It's absolutely.
Well, maybe that's because it was cold weather when they invaded the bird sanctuary. Maybe the Bundy Bunch would have been National Guarded too, you know, if they'd done it when the National Guard wouldn't, like, you know, get cold.
Well, yeah, that's true. You know, you never know. You never quite know their reasoning. But I'm sure somewhere Jesus does.
But there is some happy news. I mentioned the Bundy attorney being a raving asshole. You know, trying to supersede the judge's jurisdiction. They're free to go. Now,
okay.
Marcus Mumford got tased when he did that.
Well, that'll leave a mark at least.
Yeah.
The only thing is it's covered under Obamacare, so, you know, hey. You know.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe there's some audio. Stand by. Hold on. This might be fun.
Sure.
This is from what's her name? Shauna Cox, who was arrested in the invasion, had to say. I don't know if it'll play or not. Having some problems.
The judge would not stop those marshals. She allowed the marshals to take them and put them back in jail when they shouldn't have, and he was defending them. He's a hero. He's trying to stop them from abusing them more.
Yeah, only thing is, they've been indicted in Nevada, too.
Yeah, Nevada doesn't play.
So they shouldn't have been turned loose. Oh, wait, there's more.
No.
In this jailhouse over here, they have been abused. They have.
Oh, someday, high-speed internet, someday. come on.
Been beaten, they have been starved, they have been, we've been shot.
Shot? They've been shot?
Let me tell you something, and it is from the federal government that's doing this. Stand up, please. Please stand up for the Constitution, because we know we're innocent. We know that God's here to protect this country. He loves us, and they tased Mark. They attacked him. 8 to 10 marshals attacked Marcus Mumford. And
couldn't quite remember his name.
And twisted him up. I saw him, and they tased him because they wanted to have control so that they can take Ammon and Ryan, and they're still not released.
Because, again, they've been indicted in Nevada, and they're not supposed to be released.
Well, yeah, but why would logic and reason actually prevail in that thought?
Yeah, I know, crazy talk, huh? Thomas, break a leg in the coming hour. Yep. Have a good evening.
You too.
All right, later. Time for me to wrap up here. Long filibobster, sorry about that. Hey, we're gonna close the program this evening. We've still got one slot open for a new subscriber to be rounded up, courtesy of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. All new subscribers get $11 added in celebration of the 11th anniversary of the Horn, courtesy of Ralph's, until Election Day. Okay, new subscribers. And we close the program at $466 deficit. It feels kind of down in a hole-ish, and it really does. So that puts us in a bind for beating the Swede. And hopefully we will not start Friday on the front porch in a $666 beastly hole. Hopefully. So thanks, everybody, for chiming in. Thanks for joining in. Thanks for supporting the network and the program. And I will I'll wish you all a happy evening until Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to all of you. And thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.